folks are biased towards internal combustion engine or ICE vehicles forever. And so when they walk in, they expect to have the same service they've had forever, but maybe in a fancier environment or something. And you really have to go, yeah, look, it's way different.
Matt Meyer, account executive here with Kyle Grantham, producer. EVs are hot, right? Everybody wants an electric vehicle. Imagine you can drive without ever having to go to a gas station. It's new, it's green, it's exciting. But what do you do when you get into a collision?
Don't get in a collision. I can tell you from firsthand experience, don't do it.
Well, if you do, turns out Delaware is one of the best places to be. Because today we're talking to Evolve Auto CEO and founder John Swigert, a Sally's grad, and also a former executive of a little company called Tesla. He's really leading the way in fixing electric vehicles, and he's doing it right here in Newcastle County.
He is, and I've been to him. I got rear-ended in my Tesla, and it was going to take 3 months for Tesla to even bring it in to fix it. And not only did Evolve get it done faster, Evolve got it done before Tesla was even going to bring it in for an estimate. So really impressive work.
That's right. If you're in the EV market, if you're looking to buy a car, he's going to tell us about the difference between analog and digital electric vehicles and talk some about the future of the green transition in the transportation space. So excited to hear what John Swigert has to say today. Hello, everyone. This is Matt Meyer, County Executive for Newcastle County. Welcome to Pod County, the first podcast in the first county in the first state, here with John Swigert of Evolve. He's the founder and CEO of Evolve. He's a former Tesla C-suite executive hailing from Delaware, went and made it big with Tesla, one of the most exciting automotive movement technologies of our time, and then came back home. John, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Let's start by talking a little bit about Evolve. What I learned about it from Kyle Grantham, the producer of this show, who had to get his Tesla fixed.
Yeah.
And usually when you got to get your car fixed, it's not sort of a highlight of your day, week, month, year. And he's like, you got to check this out.
Yeah.
And so we went over there. You gave us a tour. This is green jobs. It's real green jobs. Talk about Evolve.
Right. Evolve exists to really support EV owners and the community in the transition to electric vehicles or alternative energy sources of transportation. So we recognized these are really different things, these vehicles, and they really need a very different approach to how you kind of care for them and service them. So my time at Tesla, we could see that there's this huge gap in the adoption of electric vehicles, and it really is on the kind of third-party service side. So you could see that the service industries, the insurance industries, really aren't ready to do these things, as well as, you know, they're a very interdependent machine. So all of the systems inside the machine are really rely heavily on the other systems. The way the service industry is structured today is you've got body shops and tire shops and muffler shops and detail shops, and so everybody's kind of peeled off at the different systems of a vehicle and figured out how to maximize maybe profit or simplify things for consumers. The difference on these vehicles are that all of those systems are so interdependent that if one goes down, maybe all go down. So the future really looks like you need to have the ability to service or to deal with all the systems inside the vehicle to get it running and to care for it properly. Otherwise, you'd wind up kind of towing these things from provider to provider for months, maybe, to kind of get them fixed. So
you do what you're saying in short is you do everything. If it's my tires, it's my windshield. If it's my paint, my car doors, whatever. My AC is not working.
Yeah.
We go to Evolve.
That's right. Yeah. So we're kind of creating a brand new industry. We're the only one of these so far in the world, as far as we can tell. So we're only electric. And all services required to kind of keep these running to help the consumer maximize the capability.
And where you're located in California, New York City?
No, we are located here in Newcastle County, a stone's throw from where we're sitting right now by the airport. Unique in that the first one of these in the world is sitting right here in Newcastle County, Delaware.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's an amazing facility.
Yeah, thanks.
Tell me about it. So what's the difference? You know, if I'm an auto guy, if I'm an engine guy, I know my mufflers. Yeah. How hard is it to start fixing up the cars?
How hard is it?
Is it the same or is it really, really different?
It's really, really different. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It looks like a car. That's kind of the confusing thing. It's got some seats and some tires, but it maybe ends right there. So very different. Think about it this way. It's really more of like a technology platform. So I like to think, and I'm sure you can remember, maybe not everyone can, but it was June of 2007 when the iPhone was released.
Did you just call me old?
No. I called me old and you old adjacent.
In June 2007, yeah. iPhone's
released, and you know, I was one of the early adopters, and I waited in line, and I got it on day three or something like that, mm-hmm. and I took it home and opened it up, and in looking at it, it was like, wow, this is really unique, and there's so much capability that we've not even thought of. Like instantly, you're looking at the idea of commerce to go, mm-hmm. boy, this isn't a phone; it's a way for me to kind of personally, intimately connect with the internet in my pocket, and so it kind of opens up the world. These digital EVs, and there's some differences in EVs, but the digital EVs are that same technology platform. And so when you look at a Tesla, for example, you got to go, well, it's self-driving. It carries 3.5 days worth of energy inside the battery pack. It's got 13 microphones and 9 cameras and all kinds of sensor suite inside of it. And you go, what could you do with that? And so, you know, for example, and I'll make some stuff up to go, you know, that vehicle could drive down the road, look at every single pothole, based on the sound it makes as it passes it, determine how bad that pothole is, order from the streets department and kind of prioritize the potholes, which ones will cause flats, and just by driving, right? And so, and I just made that up.
So you're saying, we look at Teslas, by and large, and as this new vehicle that's able to move around more energy efficiently or not pulling on fossil fuels, yeah. or whatever. You're saying it's actually much more than that. This is like a super-powered iPhone,
yeah.
that's taking in all this information, that's on wheels, and by the way, it can also move you around, kind of the way an iPhone is this super-powered thing that can do all this stuff, and oh, by the way, you can make a phone call with it,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're only just scratching the surface of what's possible, and very little of it has been adopted yet, but it's coming, and it's coming fast. And so calling an EV a car is like calling an iPhone a phone. It's 2%, to your point, it's 2% of what it's capable of doing.
So talk about some of what that possibility is. So you mentioned potholes and roof repair, so you no longer need to call and say, hey, I found a pothole. The car will be able to tell the system, and the system, if it's a smart government system, like hopefully we have here in Newcastle yeah. County, or a Deldot, will be able to automate a system sure. to get someone out there to repair it. What are some other ways that this can really improve lives and improve communities?
Well, it's kind of endless. Think about, I know we've discussed things like Amber Alerts to go, boy, imagine every car on the road has microphones and cameras and incredibly powerful computers that are connected to the internet 24/7. So you could upload an Amber Alert to say, hey, all EVs in this market, here's the voice, here's the face. And instantly every car, you would never know it, but instantly every car is scanning the community for that sound, that face, and could instantly report back those things. And it's sort of unlimited if you think about it, you know, and it can drive itself. We're very close to full self-driving with some of these more advanced EVs, but boy, it goes on and on and on. And I think what's important about that is to say, you know, I know we talked about, you know, green jobs that can be created, but go one step above that and like think about green like opportunities to go. It's just like when that iPhone came out. All of a sudden, there's some people looking at that going, boy, I wonder if you could do that or you could use this thing in this way. So like what's going to be available to us here just like now and over the next couple of years, just these incredible opportunities for people to really, if they could understand what the capabilities of that product are, yep. to really start developing really clever ideas, new businesses, which then from there create new jobs. So You know, it's way beyond job creation. It's like there's all of this. It's sort of like how AI is developing
right
now. It's going to mean some jobs don't exist any longer,
right,
but it's also going to mean there's these brand new opportunities. So, you know, you could get better at something that already exists in someone else and create some additional jobs. But boy, it sounds so much better to me to create incredible new opportunities for new businesses
right
that can create new jobs. So
worldwide, potentially.
Yeah, worldwide. And so it is really an important time. These machines are way more critical to what the future might look like for all of us than people really recognize. And so, because it's funny, you know, they do get politicized from time to time about
right
what, and to go, look, get over that.
Right.
Look at what these things are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very different idea. Back to your kind of original question there, are they different to fix? Way different to fix. And so, yeah, there you could probably, like changing a tire would be largely the same. But thinking through that digital platform, that single computer sort of that runs that vehicle, and the firmware that drives it, you have to take a very different look at it. Whereas, you know, with an internal combustion engine vehicle, if you have a broken windshield, it's just a broken windshield. Everything works fine. You
right
replace the windshield. With these, you really have to look at all systems and how they impact each other in order to fix these things. So, like today, the laptop has replaced sort of the 10-millimeter wrench.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you just hook up a laptop and.
Yeah, those are the tools now, and so that means you could think about it. It's a lot more like fixing a computer than it is fixing a car, and so you got to be prepared to do that. We've used that analogy. If you had a laptop on the roof of your car and you drove off out of the parking lot and it fell on the ground, and you brought it to the computer shop and you said, how much, they would go, well, you need a new screen, but we can't tell you anything about the rest of it until we install that screen and then test all the systems. Digital EVs are very much the same, that it's you just can't tell any longer because of that interdependency.
You keep using the term digital EV.
Yeah.
Is that different than EV?
Yeah.
So there are some EVs that you don't think are digital EVs.
That's right, yeah. So we'll call those analog EVs. So some manufacturers sort of, in the pursuit of getting something out there, have taken internal combustion engine vehicles and sort of just jammed a battery and an electric motor in there and said, there's an electric vehicle.
Which ones?
Oh, you could look at, you know, a Ford Lightning, for example, or a Volkswagen ID.4.
So Chevy Bolt?
Chevy Bolt, yeah. GM products, more analog than
uh-huh
a digital EV.
Mustang Mach-E. I'm going through our county fleet naming all the things we bought.
Sorry about that. They're just different, you know, and those machines probably are serviced in a very similar fashion to internal combustion engine machines. They're going to behave very differently, but at the same time, they will not perform the same. For example, the primary thing to consider on EVs is over-the-air updates. To say,
so you can hit a button and get the latest.
Yeah,
greatest.
Just like your iPhone, that there's new updates that come out and they're automatically installed. Does your car have over-the-air updates? And so you won't find that in a General Motors product. No dig on General Motors products, but these are very much analog EVs.
Right. It's car people designing, whereas a Tesla, a Rivian are designed by computer people.
That's right. And you know, you can say a Tesla, Rivian, a Lucid, they were designed in a laptop, whereas the Volkswagen was designed on a lift
mm-hmm
in a shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll hear the term from time to time called a software-derived vehicle. It's a single piece of software, it's typically called firmware, and it's typically run off a single computer. Very different, whereas manufacturers like GM, you know, they're not in the software business. They build cars. They, you know, what do they make anymore? They make bodies and they make engine blocks, sort
mm-hmm
of. Everything else they buy and assemble.
Yeah.
But they certainly don't make software. And so they, all the third part, the tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers for parts for most manufacturers, for example, if you buy a transmission from Tremec or Bosch or something, they'll sell you the transmission along with the little processor, the little computer that runs it. These analog EVs may have 100 to 150 individual little computers inside that all have to talk to each other, kind of, and they use edge computing, which means all the code has to go through all of the different little processors in order to make it work. So there's built in a ton of latency. Because of that, they cannot do the same sort of tricks that a software-derived vehicle can do. For example, if you just wanted to change the speed of a power window motor on a Volkswagen, yeah, you could talk to the company that built the regulator, which is maybe Bosch, it might not be Volkswagen, and they would talk to their engineer that would make an adjustment in the code to the software that runs the window up and down. And you go, pretty simple. Well, no, because there's maybe 150 to 200 other software suppliers involved in sort of this edge computing nightmare where that software would have to then be given to all the other 200 and confirm it now works with them. So in order to make an update to that vehicle, something as simple as changing the window speed could cost millions of dollars and take a year. Whereas a software-derived vehicle, you could talk to an engineer and say, can you make that window go up and down faster? And he could connect to the firmware, open up the code, make a few changes to the parameters, and hit done. And your car can instantly change the window
speed. Or you could probably even create a screen that shows up in your dashboard where you can pick your window
speed. Even better, right? And so all of those features and improvements are not available in these analog EVs. And so, and we've used this analogy to say, imagine if every time, and I'm holding an iPhone, but every time you wanted to download a new app in your iPhone, you had to drive to the Christiana Mall Park, walk in the mall, walk to the Apple Store, sign up at the Genius Bar, wait for the kid to be available, and hand him your phone, tell him what you need. He takes it in the back, plugs it into two computers. 30 minutes later, you've got the app on your phone. And then every time you needed to update that app, you'd have to drive back to the mall. And that is very much what, like, an ID4 may be versus a Model 3 Tesla, to say, yeah, it's super cumbersome. So that's an important point that it's a technology platform, these new EVs, to go, boy, what can happen in the future? We're just scratching the surface. But if you're driving that other one, not possible.
What does that mean for your business? You're fixing both.
We fix both, yeah. There is a lot of education with EV owners and with all of the kind of supporting industries, whether that's insurance or parts manufacturers or paint suppliers. There's a lot of education that has to happen in order to understand, based on whether it's an analog or a digital, what they'll need to do or what we need to do to kind of return that thing back to its proper state. In fact, we used to call it the sales process, and we've had to change that to the orientation process to go, listen,
education.
Yeah, you got to know that before we start, there's some really different things about this. And so let's kind of go through those things together. So it really makes the process very different. But it's, folks are biased towards internal combustion engine or ICE vehicles forever. And so when they walk in, they expect to have the same service they've had forever, but maybe in a fancier environment or something. And you really have to go, yeah, look, it's way different. The good thing is most of the folks that own these digital EVs are traditionally early adopters and they're techies. They understand.
The guys in line with you on the third day of the iPhone release 15 years ago, right?
Yeah. And so they get it. They're on forums. They understand the challenges with the manufacturers and with the product itself. And so it's not so hard. It's going to change, though, as the Model 2 or the the Model 2 that's coming.
They get less expensive, and they're
more
people who don't necessarily want a piece of software. They want a car.
Yeah, they just want a car to be able to move them through the process and understand. Look, it's going to be different, and at the same time, improve the process. So, like, let's face it, it should be less complex than an internal combustion engine vehicle as we go forward. And the truth is, it absolutely can be. Absolutely. I mean, imagine if there's something wrong with your car tells you before you know. Mm-hmm. On your touchscreen, it pops up that it says there's several locations that can service this car tomorrow. Pick one. You hit OK. You go home. You go to bed. Your car drives itself to the service center. The repairs happen. It drives itself. You can say, hey, deliver it to my work. It drives itself to your work the next day, and you're done. That's what's coming. So this whole thing will look very, very different.
Coming, and in some ways, it's here. After I visited Evolve, I had a meeting last month in Phoenix, Arizona, and I called an Uber, and the Uber that showed up had no driver.
Yeah.
It was a Waymo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Waymo.
Yep.
And I got in, and it had my name on the marquee scrolling on top. That's how I knew it was my Uber. The phone asked me if I wanted to open the trunk, to put anything in the trunk. I get in. I could pick the music. I could, if I had any issue, I could hit a button and talk to customer service, but it was just me in the car. What's going on with self-driving? I think for 10 years, it's been coming next year.
Yeah. Boy, you know, Tesla has FSD V12, so full self-driving version 12, which is coming hopefully soon. And it's the first end-to-end neural network sort of in the world, which means in the past, engineers have written all the code about self-driving, for example, saying that's a stop sign. When you see it, it looks like this. Here's what you need to do to stop. What Tesla did was put these little neural networks on the end of each one of these sections of self-driving software and said, hey, when the human changes the program and says, nope, I don't like what you're doing, I'll take over, let's record what's happening and let's compare it to what the software said and let's learn what's wrong with the way we're writing the code so that the little neural network can start to teach us things. And what's happened now is that those, in just, you know, a few years, or really in some cases a few months, those neural networks have figured out how we think and how we interact with software to the point where they went, we don't need a programmer any longer, we've got this. Kind of a little frightening.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds a little dang. Now you've gone over the border of, this. We have an exciting future. Like, this can be scary.
Oh,
the neural network can spin out of control and be more powerful than
that's
ours.
Right. And that's why you see all this big push about, hey, we need some controls on AI. Because, look, let's face it, it'll be a long time before it can replicate what a human brain can do, a long time. But but it certainly can do a lot of simple tasks very, very well and much better than us in sorting things out. So like that exists. I think most of the challenges on full self-driving are around sort of regulations to go, anytime there's an accident, anytime there's an issue, that can get blown up and shut things down. And we as a Tesla owner myself, if you use full self-driving, you can see when there's issues because all of a sudden the software backs up. There's a firmware update and doesn't perform the same way as it did.
Right.
And it's regulatory to say, careful, the technology is there. I don't know if the willingness is there yet for like us as a society to accept it, but it's there. So the more self-driving vehicles on the road, the less accidents, absolutely the less accidents there will be, which impacts us too to go, wait a minute.
Right, that's not good for you.
Yeah,
that's a got a good business
spot. We're in that business.
Yeah.
But As that transition happens, these machines look more like trains and airplanes than, a passenger car. So, boy, the technology's there. I think it's a matter of willingness for us to be able to sort of open up some of the regulations. And if you've ever used it, you can. And people that have used it before, you can go, it works well sometimes, and other times it's meh.
Yeah.
But statistically, what they know, and this isn't perfect math, but a Tesla, for example, without full self-driving with autopilot turned on, will have an accident about once every 0.9 million miles. In full self-driving, it's 4.5 million miles. So it's literally has five times less accident experience in self-driving.
Full self-driving versus partial self-driving.
Yeah. And people say, oh, it's sketchy. It's like, they'll make... You'll see some articles on how many people have been injured and, or even killed in a self-driving. And what they don't say is how many have not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a comedian a few months ago who said, what percent of drivers are using their cell phones when driving? And he said, 100%. I did a survey. Just look around you when you're driving. It's 100%. And so, you know.
Yeah.
Self-driving is probably better than that guy on the road. As a biker, I feel more comfortable having self-driving than somebody, playing around with their cell phone.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not that the technology's not there. It's more on the willingness side for us to adopt. But, boy, what happens in full self-driving? Certainly there's no drunk driving. There's senior citizens wouldn't have to, take their license away. You can just... beckon something.
And also, I've seen evidence, again, not to destroy your business, but for not to destroy the American way of having a car. But there's a lot of evidence that shows, and we're starting to see this, that when you take the driver out of Uber or out of Lyft, the cost per trip obviously goes way down. There's minimal cost. And so suddenly the cost of home ownership isn't really justified. And so a large swath of the population may just, you know, we're even in suburban areas, might just, you know, when they need a car, they hit a button on their phone and it shows up self-drive.
Yeah, I think maybe in 30 years, driving a car will be like riding a horse. Like,
there's something I want to do.
Yeah, you can go on a Saturday and...
It's interesting because we run in the largest land use regulator in the state here in this building in New Castle County. That you talk about that, like you don't need parking lots or dramatically reduced parking lots and parking structures. We need to overhaul our laws, local laws. And listen, you spent most of your career, I presume, in California?
No, mostly here in the area, but for several years lived out there.
Why a company like Evolve?
Yeah.
You start that anywhere.
Yeah.
Why did you do it here?
This is my home. I grew up in the market. You know, when we look at...
Sally's boy.
Yes, Sally's boy. When you look at the greater Philadelphia area, so there's quite a few EVs in the market. It would make sense maybe to say start on the West Coast, but there's a lot of EVs on the West Coast, and there's a lot of interest in doing this. For me, it's more about the markets where there's plenty of demand but no capability. So... This market actually has a lot of demand for EVs. We're looking at our second market in Baltimore/DC area, and we're looking at in Nashville, Tennessee, which doesn't make a lot of sense to go electric vehicles in Nashville. And the answer is like, yeah, lots of adoption of EVs, very little capability. So
what do you do today if you're in Nashville? Evolve's not there.
Yeah.
What do you do if you have some issue that Kyle and my staff have? What do you do? Yeah.
Well, you get in line with the internal combustion engine vehicles, and you go through that sort of broken internal combustion engine service strategy.
Gotcha.
And so it just takes a long time. You know, I think the average, the term is cycle time they'll use in the collision repair side of things, which is sort of from the moment you drop the car off to you pick it back up on electric vehicles nationally is a little less than 40 days. For an internal combustion engine vehicle, it's probably less than 12.
Wow.
So way longer. And to fix these, and people would look at that and go, yeah, that's the nature of the beast. And the answer is no, it's the nature of the service industry.
Yeah.
They're not prepared for it. Our cycle time is about 9 days. So we actually outperform internal combustion engine service providers, but we've had to do everything very different. So today, if, you know, outside of our market, yeah, you're going to be in longer lines and it's more frustrating and a little more complex. And you hear pushback all over the place for EV adoption. And yeah, so some of it's real to go, yeah, it's hard. Maybe they're more expensive. It's harder to get them fixed. But it doesn't mean it's not a great idea and it's not where we're headed. You know, we can say, When Henry Ford built the Model T, there were no highways.
Yeah.
It didn't stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to envision the future and build for it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's definitely challenges with EV ownership. But, man, it's an incredible opportunity right now. And you look at, you know, things like the Cybertruck. Tesla Cybertruck was just released. They've got 2 million on order. Mm. 2 million. And so you'll hear comments that, you know, people don't want EVs. Well, people don't want the bad EVs. Yeah, certainly.
Does Tesla despise you?
Like, no.
Don't they? No. Don't I would think if I'm a Tesla guy, if I work at Tesla and I want to make money, it's not just producing and selling the cars; it's fixing them up too.
What I'll say is Tesla's primary objective is really to build these things, design, find less expensive ways to manufacture, lower the price. And you know, transition the world to alternative transportation. So that is the mission. Service, collision repair, there's really no interest in doing that as a profit center for the business. They just do it because they have to.
Right.
So they would much rather put all their resources in the adoption side, right, and the development side. So Tesla's happy to have third-party providers start to jump into this arena.
Right,
to
especially
say,
someone like you, I imagine.
Yeah.
Who really knows the vehicle.
Yeah, just to say help. You know, we'll see a doubling, almost near doubling, in the number of EVs on the road this year. And so...
That's not just Tesla. That's any EVs.
EVs, yeah. And so, boy, they can't get Tesla alone. They can't keep up. There's so much demand. You know, they're struggling to be able to make deliveries,
right,
and service the vehicles under warranty. After warranty... So the first Model S is 2012. So we're already now
10 years,
11 years in. they need people to get into this business, and they are great with supporting others to get into this business. So,
great.
Yeah.
Which brings us to green jobs. How many people are you hiring now?
Oh boy, I think roughly 40 something right now.
And what was impressive when I visited, just sort of talking to some of the individuals working on the floor, is there are people who months, year or two earlier, really had no experience with cars or computers. Yeah. I think one guy I met was working in the Geek Squad at Best Buy, and you're really training them in skills of tomorrow.
Yeah. It's true. You can't, like, if you were to go out and open an EV business and run an ad for EV technicians, no one would.
Yeah, I need highly trained EV technicians. Yeah.
They just don't exist. So you have to create training. You have to create processes that people can be trained by, because it's all very different. Most people in the automotive service industry would look at that as a big roadblock to say, boy, because you'll hear all the time in automotive service, we can't hire people. There's no people in the industry. And I agree. So stop trying.
Right.
Build those people.
Yeah.
You know, in the factory, we didn't run ads for people that knew how to install instrument panels. We just hired people that wanted a good job and good benefits and had some basic mechanical skills, some basic problem-solving aptitude, and maybe some leadership capability. And we trained them on the rest because there were simple processes to follow. So it's no different here in this EV world to say, look, you can't do it the way you've always done it. In fact, we just had Hodgson in here, Votech.
Hodgson, Votech, yeah.
Yeah, last week, and they brought some of their team saying, we need to learn.
Yeah.
Like, how can we help
you? We need a pathway.
You? Yeah. Yeah. And so they came in asking, what should we be teaching? What do we need to learn? And we spent a half a day with them or so, and starting to open their eyes to say, look, you have to rethink everything about this program. Like, what's the most important skill that people need? It's problem-solving capability.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the ability to loosen a bolt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so they're very intrigued, you know, obviously with what we're doing, and they really want to work closely together to help create the right curriculum, teach the right things so that they can help start bringing
it's
up.
It's incredible.
The right
you're
people.
Bringing people in unskilled who after 2 years, 3 years, 4 years working with you can be a high school teacher, Votech part-time.
That's yeah,
and
that's,
help out,
that's
help
right.
train the you sort of train the trainer.
Yeah, that's
fantastic,
right.
Incredibly exciting. How does a kid from Sally's, you know, if I list the Sally's grads and the Delawareans who are out there in the community, in the country, in the world, doing amazing things. There's a whole bunch in business, in government, in sports, in education, doing incredible things. I can't think of many Delawareans who are out there setting the world on fire, you know, creating green jobs, creating economies of tomorrow. Why do you think you?
Huh. Maybe quite by accident, I guess. you know, I was at Slazy Annam. I was always the tiniest kid in my class at the time, so all boys Catholic sports school. If you were a small kid, I could make your car go fast. So I came up. My father, my grandfather were all sort of in the industry, so that was my key to success.
In the car industry,
yeah, in the car business.
The GM,
automotive service. And
gotcha.
My parents were DuPonters, the rest of us here,
right.
And so, but I could make cars go fast, and so that got me through. High school, so I always had been around cars and always kind of loved cars. But yeah, it's sort of quite by accident, you know, to get involved in Tesla. And what I can tell you is I've always been a car guy. Love cars, internal combustion engine, you know, lots of fuel coming out the tailpipe. But the first time I got into a Tesla, and I flew to Milwaukee to visit a friend who was a shop owner. I showed up. I was walking in the front door. He said, do me a favor, follow me. We're delivering a car. And he threw me a set of keys. And he pointed to a red Tesla and said, I'd never been in a Tesla. He said, follow me. And I drove that car maybe 20 or 30 miles. And when I was behind the wheel of that car, I just went, oh, game over. It's game over. And so it was that one moment, a revelation to go, these things are incredibly different and amazing vehicles. And then, you know, a good friend, a guy I had worked with, wound up taking a role at Tesla. And the day he took that role, called me and said, come help. We're underwater, you know, operations, you know, service, you know, cars, help. And so I jumped in and, you know, one thing led to another.
Wow.
So no intention of doing that. But the important thing here is that, boy, just drive one. Just spend a little time around one of these digital EVs. There's no mandates needed to convert to electric. Uh-huh. Not required.
Yeah.
Just jump in one and drive it and see what they're capable of, and you'll see.
I generally agree with you. I have a stick shift. If they could make an EV with a stick shift, that would win my heart.
I'm sure they can. But, we'll just have somebody bolt one in there that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, right. Anyway, we're here with John Swigart. Thank you so much for innovating here in Delaware. You could go anywhere. You're starting your company here. Yeah. You're creating good jobs here. And we need to do whatever we can working with Votex, working with Deltec, with higher education to make sure we're getting you the employees you need so you continue to grow and grow right here. It's very exciting for us.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate having us here and giving us the opportunity.
And if you know anyone who has an issue with their EV, Evolve is the place to go. Evolve in Newcastle. It's a pretty neat place.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you.